Hi, this is Tony Robbins, and welcome to another edition of Power Talk. I'm sure you're going to enjoy this month's edition on Watch Your TV. What the heck does that mean? Watch your transformational vocabulary. I've talked a little bit about this to you in previous Power Talks, and this month I'd like to give you a thorough understanding of how to use your conditioned, consistent, habitual vocabulary to change the quality of your life today and for the rest of your life. When you and I have sensations in our body, whether they be painful or pleasurable, the way that we're able to know what that experience is, the way we have a shortcut to know whether it's going to mean pain or pleasure and what we should do about it, is we describe those experiences by giving them labels called words. What's interesting is two people can experience the exact same sensations, let's say somewhat painful sensations in their body, but they may give it a different label in the form of a word. One might call it frustration. The other person might just say, well, it's kind of confusing. The difference between being frustrated or being slightly confused is a huge difference in how we feel. And when we change the way we feel, we change the way we behave. So I thought this month, rather than just having a direct conversation with you, I'm here in Maui, and we've got almost 1,000 people here living with us for 3 weeks. And we're having a great time together. So I thought it might be fun for you to kind of listen in. And since I was going to talk about transformational vocabulary here, I thought you might want to hear it in kind of a seminar format, if you would, as I share with our participants how they can change their entire life simply by changing habitual vocabulary they use to describe their life. I think you'll enjoy it. So let's go right to the seminar. Here we go. Watch Your TV, Transformational Vocabulary. Transformational vocabulary. Here's how I discovered this. When I say discovered it, it's always been there. It's just I came up with a label for myself that helped me to understand a dynamic of human experience. And when I understood the label, I was able to use it consistently. You already do what I'm going to share with you. But once you have a label for it, you have a way to do it consciously, a way to do it directly. You can do it consistently and get consistent results. Here's what occurred. I'm in a business meeting. There are three people, myself and two friends with me. One is a business associate who is running one of my companies, myself and my buddy. We all were impacted by an event. That is, something happened. We all got the same input, okay? You got the picture in your head? But we all had totally different responses. Absolutely totally different responses to the exact same input that should have impacted us the same way. The gentleman who was running one of my companies went into absolute total rage. I mean, like, it kind of freaked me out, quite honestly, because he was so intense. It felt to me like he was overly intense based on the situation. How many have seen, been an experience like this with somebody? And I thought, what's going on with him to make him that intense? But I didn't notice that at first, because when it first came in, all I first processed it through who? Myself. And you know what? I got angry. He was in rage. My buddy over here, he honestly had no reaction at all to it. And you know what? I was in the middle of it, but I'm such a student of human behavior that I'm always noticing what's going on, because I'm always asking, what does this mean? What does this do? How can I make more of this? What can I learn from this? And so I'm looking at this thing, and I was in the experience, and also, I thought, well, what can I learn from this? One, because I didn't want to be angry. And two, it was a great chance to learn, because I noticed we're all having such radically different reactions to the exact same event. And we all are being affected equally in theory, right? Because it's going to affect us equally, the results of it. So I turned to my buddy here, who was like enraged, and I said, look, I said, I'm angry about this thing, but I mean, you're out of control. What's the deal here? Why are you so upset? And he went on and on and on. He said, you know, I'm enraged because this and this and this. He went on and on and gave this long description about why he was so unbelievably angry. And I thought to myself, how come he's in so much rage and I'm angry? And then I went to this guy and I said, you don't seem to be upset about it at all. He said, no, I'm not really that upset. And I said, how come? He said, it's not worth being upset over. I said, it's not worth being upset over. I mean, you realize what this means? He goes, yeah. And this guy over here went, what do you mean, yeah? Don't you understand? I'm looking at this thing, and I'm in it, and I got out of it. I'm like, wow, this is really bizarre. And I said, well, how come you're such rage? He says, because you got to be in it. You got to, because we got to change this thing. We got to change it now. I said, I agree, but you don't have to be that intense to change it. He goes, yes, we do. So I noticed there's some different beliefs here. This one is not worth being upset about. Mine is worth being upset about, but not out of control. Upset enough, just go do something about it. And this person is, man, you got to be out of control to make it happen. So I thought about it for a while, and I thought, okay, why does he get enraged? There's only one reason he gets into rage, because he believes somewhere that by having rage, he gets out of what? Pain, and he gets some kind of strength. This guy, however, clearly for him not to be upset, must link a lot of pain to getting upset. How many would agree? And pleasure in not getting upset. So I decided to explore whether that was true or not. So I started with this guy, because I said, you know what? I've known you for a few years now, and I don't think I've ever seen you like really upset about anything. He goes, I don't get upset about things. I said, oh, come on. And you know what? He isn't stuffing it either. He doesn't disassociate. He's associated and he doesn't look upset. There's a difference. And I said, I just don't get it. I said, you know, that time when the IRS came and took $250,000 of his dollars, and it wasn't just their money to take. They screwed up. Took him 2.5 years to get the money back. They emptied his accounts, and they were absolutely wrong. And this guy goes, I'd kill him! I said, didn't that just make you angry? He said, well, it annoyed me. I said, annoyed you? What do you mean it annoyed you? He goes, yeah, it annoyed me. I thought, annoyed, what a weird word. I thought to myself, I don't think I've ever used the word annoyed. You really annoy me. I thought that was really weird. And I thought, yeah, and I don't usually feel the way he feels either. I don't use the word, and I don't feel the feeling. I said, let me ask you a question. Why don't you ever get upset? He said, because if you get upset, and my friend here is very competitive. He said, because if you get upset, then you lose control. I said, what happens if you lose control? He said, then the other guy wins. Why doesn't he get upset? Because to him, getting upset means you lose. Getting upset means ultimate pain. To him, to be upset would be more pain than to just blow it off. But his way of blowing it off was not dissociation. I know the difference. He like literally never really gets that negative feeling. He doesn't have to dissociate from it. He doesn't feel it. That's like such a weird thing. Meanwhile, I go to my friend over here. I said, well, what does it mean, you know, if you get angry? He says, well, if you get angry, it means you get stronger. What happens when you get stronger? He says, then you can make things happen. You can turn it around. He's linked up what? That if you get angry, you have resources. If you get angry, you turn around. If you get angry, you win. If you get angry, you got pleasure. Interesting, huh? And if you don't, you'll lose. That's his belief. I'm in between these guys emotionally, right? I'm not his extreme and I'm not his extreme. Kind of in between the two. What's my belief? My belief is you get me intense, I will do whatever it takes. You get me intense, I'm sharp as a razor. I can take it off in a heartbeat. But I also believe I can do it because I'm excited about it. I can do it because it's fun. So I don't have to be angry to do it, and I don't have to be like pleased to do it. I can do it in either state, and I know it. So whatever state I'm in, I take advantage of. How many of you can see how our pain, pleasure, beliefs shape our emotions? So I took a look at that, and I kept this annoyed thing bugging me. And I started thinking, I've never used that word, and I kept bringing it to my head. I heard myself say, I never use that word, and I never feel that feeling. I thought, I wonder what would happen the next time something happened, and I started to get these sensations, and I called that annoyed. What would happen? So I tried it in my head. I thought about something, and I thought, that annoys me. And you know what it did? It broke my what? Pattern radically, and it also made me smile. And I thought, well, that's interesting. That's real interesting. I thought, I wonder what would happen if I consistently used that word. And I started to mess with it. So I started to play with this a little bit. And I thought, what would be a word that would really break my pattern? I started coming up with ones like, I'm peeved. Can you just imagine me going, that peeves me. What it made me do is crack up and laugh. And so I thought about it, and this is what I came up with. I said, look, pretend this is a human being, right? And this human being's got all this experience, all the stuff you're seeing, all the stuff you're hearing, all the stuff you're smelling, tasting, somebody says something to you, all these sensations are coming in, and your brain is going to funnel those into a meaning. Isn't that true? Yes or no?
Yes.
So all the stuff comes in, your brain's got to take all these things you're seeing, hearing, feeling, movements, tonalities, all that stuff, and you got to create a meaning out of it. And the meaning you create is what will be real to you, whether it's true or not. Is that true? The point is, the meaning that we come up with out of our life's experience is not necessarily the real meaning, but we act as if it is. But when we take all this stuff in to create a real meaning, we got to represent what things mean. And how have you and I, and virtually every other human on earth, learned to represent meanings so that we can express it to other people? And how else have we learned to represent what things mean to ourselves in a shorthand version? That is, not have to go through and try and take and compare this to every experience we ever had. What is the shortcut we use to communicate? Words, not just to communicate to other people what we're experiencing, but to even to communicate it to ourselves. Are words the same as the experience we're having, yes or no? Yes or no? Are the words the same as the experience we're having, yes or no? No, they are not. Words are labels. When I say the word dog, did you all have the same experience or different ones? Which one? Different ones. So we got to realize that words are generalizations too. They're all kinds of different dogs. Even if I say to you a specific kind of dog, if I say a mean German Shepherd, a mean brown German Shepherd, a mean brown German Shepherd about this tall, you still aren't going to get the same experience. So here's my point. All this experience came in for all three of us. It was basically the same thing, but we all converted that into something because each one of us has a different habitual vocabulary that we use. In other words, in my realm of words, first of all, how many words are there in the English language? Anybody know? I got myself a little report done here. Where'd I do it? I'll tell you how many there are. Compton's Encyclopedia says there's 500,000 words. And it's calculated that, how many do you think we use? Depends on who you talk to again. Compton says we use about 2,000 words, which represents about 0.5% of the entire language. Total. That's not what you use constantly. That's like total number of words you ever use. Not your habitual vocabulary, which is much smaller than 2,000. For most people, it averages 200 to 300 words. Is that unbelievable? 500 are the outside for most people. Give you an idea, just for contrast. The Bible, the King James Version, uses 7,200 different words out of the 500,000 that are available. Milton's writings used about 17,000 different words, and Shakespeare used 24,000 words, 5,000 of them only one time. And my research lady dug this out for me. Pretty neat. Because I was talking about it, and when I got the idea, I started thinking about, well, how much do words really affect our experience? Now, somebody else, we got other sources say as much as 750,000 words. And by the way, that's twice the size. The English language is 750,000 words, which is about twice the size of its nearest competitor, which is German. And the other thing that I noted, actually, I didn't note, she got it, dug it out for me, my research lady. She said, English is unique in its respect for the spoken word and its quick acceptance of foreign and slang words, regardless of origin. And it's very unique in that we have more action-oriented words than any other language in the world. What is America known for? What's America's pride and so forth? We're an action-oriented culture, aren't we? Isn't it interesting that we have more action words than any other language on earth? Could that affect the way we represent things, therefore the way we feel and what we do? And here's the real key. This is what I asked my researchers, what I sent her out for in the first place. I said, I want to know, I want a list of all the words that describe all English emotions. In other words, in the words of English, what are all the emotions that are available to us, both painful and pleasurable? Because I noticed most people spend more time in pain than in pleasure. And you know what I suspected is true. Guess how many words we have available that are emotional words, total. Take a guess. Out of the 500 to 750,000 words that are available, how many do you think describe emotions? A total, somewhere in the range of about 2 to 3,000, again, depending upon who you read. If you look at that, 2,000 to 3,000, I'll give you one group that we put. We went through Roger's Thesaurus. There we found 3,000 words that were related to human emotion. That was the biggest capacity we could find. There we found we had 1,051 positive emotions we could represent through words. Guess how many we had? Well, I already told you. How many had negative? Twice as many. We had 2,000, actually to be accurate, we had 2,286 negative words as opposed to 1,051 positives. Check this out. The labels we put on our experience become our experience. This stuff comes in. It's a sensation of some kind of pain. And the way you describe pain is, let's say, rage, devastation, or use metaphors like, I feel like I'm being raped, or committing mental suicide, as someone just came up and told me about during the break. Okay? So let's say we've got these kinds of words here. And let's say the person on the next level, and by the way, this represents, let's say, my buddy. I'm the guy who's running my companies, right? And I'm here with angry, okay? And my buddy down here has got things like annoyed, peeved, concerned, curious, wondering, basically. Now, this same experience comes by. Do each one of us have all these words available to us potentially, yes or no? Yes, but people, our brains are trying to work at high speeds. They're trying to help us to process what things mean and what we should what? And what we should what? As fast as they can. And as a result, we tend to use certain words over and over again. How many of you notice there are certain words you just tend to use a lot? Come on. And you know what? If I have you write down the emotions you experience in a week, remember I told you yesterday we're going to find out reality? But I'd be willing to bet 90% of you will experience on an ongoing basis only about a dozen emotions per week, positive and negative combined. Now, maybe there'll be an exception in this room. And now that I pre-framed you, somebody's going to try and prove me wrong, but that'll be fine. The point is, that's what 90% of the population does when I do tests like this all over the country. A dozen words. You know why? Because those are the habitual words you use to describe your experience. So this stuff comes in. This guy calls this devastation. This guy calls it confused or wondering. And as soon as we put the label, it becomes our experience. In fact, write this down. I told you the day, but write it down here again and remember it for the rest of your life. That is simply this. The label we put on our experience becomes our experience. The minute you get an experience, a bunch of sensations in your body, you say, I'm depressed. You're doing it because that's part of your ongoing language. You may not be depressed. You may just be a little down. You may be confused. You may be a little bit curious. You may just have, you know, tension in your stomach. Remember the story I told you about Bruce Springsteen? Right? He gets his sensations in his body, and he calls them excitement. Somebody else gets those sensations. They call them fear. As soon as you put that label, it is real for you. That's it. So be very careful about the labels you put on things. More importantly, what it made me realize is I need to broaden my ongoing habitual vocabulary to describe my emotions. I need to come up with some words that empower me. So something happens, and instead of getting intense about it, my first reaction is, used to be like, why'd they do this or whatever. Now I say, that's interesting. What does interesting do? It's keeping me in a position of perceiving instead of judging, Eric. So interesting gives me a chance to keep thinking about it, see what it means. Or somebody says something, I go, I'm curious. I'm curious how you managed to like perceive me in that way. Instead of, you jerk. How could you be so stupid? I'm curious. And by saying that, it interrupts my pattern, puts me in a better state. So what I did was I started using these words, and you can't believe what happened. It lowered my emotional intensity in the areas of my pain. Immediately lowered my pain massively and made me 10 times more resourceful. You know what else I began to realize? I'm a fairly intense guy. I realized I'm intense in positive ways. I use my language in a way that empowers me. I do the reverse of this. Somebody asked somebody, how's it going? And we got three different groups here. One group says, I'm surviving. Better than dead. Another group says, pretty good. Okay. Somebody else says, I haven't been better. Or you can't imagine how good it is. Or someone says, how's it going? You go, fantastic, spectacular, splendid. And you mean it. You use it. Habitually, it's how you describe yourself. Do you know what? A lot of people have a secondary gain. When somebody says, how's it going? And I have been guilty of this. Have you? Somebody says, how's it going? You go, well, pretty good. Because you don't want to be too good, because after all, if it's too good, then maybe you're not earning what you got. Or if it's too good, they're going to like give you more responsibility. You know, and you just got your own act together, or it's too good, you know, you don't have any space, or you know what I mean? How many have been in this place? Come on. Okay, we got to fight that, because you know who we hurt? We hurt ourselves, because we get in a habit of representing to ourselves that things aren't that great, and whatever we represent is what is real for us. We believe it is true. We feel it. We experience it. Words have a biochemical effect on the body. The minute you use them, they are real. That's it. It's firing off an anchor. The minute you use a word like devastated, you become it. So better than devastated, you might say confused. I'm devastated by the fact they rejected me. I'm confused by the way they responded to me. Would that change your experience, yes or no? Yeah. This sounds so simplistic, doesn't it? Yeah. It's because it is. It also works. I can teach you something more complex, but it's amazing. Just change the labels, it changes it all. But what you gotta do is change the habits in which you do this, but it also works positive. So what's a word that I use a lot that's fairly intense on the positive side? What's one I use a lot that many of you are familiar with, even before you met me from my tapes? Passion. Think about the word passion. Is that a fairly intense word? Is that more than feeling pretty good? I'm passionate about this. Passion creates an intensity in me, a joy, an excitement, an energy, a commitment in me. The word passion has a lot more power. And the people who get around me tend to use words like that, and as a result, have more intensity. So I realized I don't want to give that up. I want to increase the intensity of the words I use on the positive side, so I increase my levels of pleasure in life and take the words on the negative side and lower them. Keep them if I need them to build rapport, to break patterns, or if I think it's useful to be intense. There are times when it's useful for that. But make them not my only choices. Not make them my choices of second resort or last resort rather than the first approach. Does that make sense to you? So I pulled Bob aside. I said, Bob, I've just come up with this great thing. I think it's so simple. And I started telling him about it. And he started telling me, he said, Tony, this is hysterical. He said, last night, he said, I had an experience that relates directly to this. He said, you know, I came home and I've been on the road for a couple months. And he said, I was real burnt out. I said, I know what that's like. And he said, I came home and Bob has this great little place right on the ocean in Malibu. And he comes home and he's got a house full of people. His daughter has come and decided to live with him for a while. She's brought somebody else, a friend. And they're all running around this house. And Bob, what does Bob want at this point? He just wants a break. And Bob finally hit threshold and exploded. And all of a sudden, here's his daughter, right? He's never talked that way. The reason she throws a pattern up, he's never talked that way to her in his life. Ever. Now, when this happened, his wife, Brandon, pulled him aside. No conversation from me. The night before, he and I talked and said to him, you know, Bob, I just noticed something. I got to tell you something. He said, you know, I notice you keep using a word, and that's Kelly, your daughter's word. That's his daughter's name, Kelly. You know, you keep talking about how you're completely overwhelmed. She said, Bob, you never say that. You always talk about being overloaded. Kelly talks about being overwhelmed right when she goes into those states. Pretty brilliant of Brandon. I said, isn't that amazing? Is it possible that the people you get around, you begin to adopt their vocabulary and therefore adopt their emotional patterns? And I thought, that is interesting. And that's when I began to realize, look at the people who spend the most time with me. They're intense, they're outrageous, we have a blast together. We use the same vocabulary. They've adopted those things. And unfortunately, some of them modeled me on the intensity side, too, on the not so great intensity. I thought, I want to be a better role model, change that, create more balance. So it motivated me from that standpoint. I thought about growing up. And I had five fathers, but the one who affected me the most was this guy. And I have some of his phrases to this day. And some of his phrases don't have any meaning. My father, the gentleman who raised me and impacted me the most, would come home after a really intense day, open the door, slam the door shut, and all of a sudden he'd yell, dudes, for no reason whatsoever. Before it was even popular, right? And you know what? I started using dudes all the time. I've been using dudes before it was popular. It made no sense. It was stupid. But I do it because I had a state attached to it. Or I'd say things like monkey guru. That made no sense. But I found myself using those later on in my life. Because I liked the states they created, and I adopted these stupid words. But you know what? They changed my state. And so I began to say, wow, I've always told people association is the ultimate lever in shaping your destiny, who you surround yourself with. But I now realize one of the major reasons is we begin to adopt the vocabulary. Do surfers use transformational vocabulary? Have they learned to create their own words, their own way of looking at things to be able to intensify the feeling of things? Yes or no? Yes. You better believe it. Cultures, every part of our culture around the world have learned to use transformational vocabulary to transform something into more or less, to either increase or lower the intensity. And that is the purpose behind using transformational vocabulary. We want to amplify the words, the habitual words we use to intensify our feelings of pleasure. And we want to de-emphasize or lower the intensity of the words we use, how often we use words that make us feel intense negative feelings. And the first step, as you can probably guess, is awareness. By the way, later that same day, Bob and I were like bouncing off the wall going, yeah, this is going to be really phenomenal. So we go off in the kitchen later on and we're having lunch and we're talking and we're talking about something else completely different and we've been cranking so hard and Bob turns to me and says, you know, Tom, he said, I can't believe that people ever get bored. He said, you know, I don't think I've ever been bored my whole life. I said, me either. I think that's crazy. He goes, yeah, you know, boredom is not even in my vocabulary. And I went, what did you just say? What did you just say? He said, boredom's not in your vocabulary and you never experience it. And I thought about that. I thought, is it possible that if you don't use a word, if it's not in your vocabulary, you will not experience the state? Because without the way to represent it, you can't experience it. And I thought, what's a word that I almost never use to describe my state? It was obvious, depression. You'll never hear me talk about I'm depressed. You know why? Because I can remember what depression was. It was the closest to death I've ever been. The most disgusting I've ever been in my life. And you know what? I was totally depressed. That's how I describe myself all the time. I link so much what to that word that I will never use it to describe myself. You may see me get frustrated, angry, upset, hurt, but you never see me get depressed. Down, but never depressed. And as a result, I have all the same sensations you may be taking and calling depression, but I'm not depressed because I never represent it that way, so I never feel it that way. It's not disassociation. It's transformation. It's taking the experience and transforming it into something that empowers you. And besides that, do you have to transform your experiences the minute you use words, whether you're trying to or not? Do you transform experience into something that's not? Is what's inside you the same as the experience outside? Yes or no? Is it exactly the same? Yes or no? No, it's whatever you decide to transform it in by the way you represent things. So you're practicing transformational vocabulary whether you want to or not. So my friend comes to see me, I haven't seen in about a year. Guy's a phenomenally successful guy, and all I know is he's going through his major divorce, got major problems, and he's depressed out of his mind, is the way he describes himself. And I turned to him, I said, you know, I've never seen you this way in all the years I've known you. He goes, yeah, man, I'm just so depressed. I'm at the bottom, I'm at the pit. I said, I'm curious. From what you said, it sounds like you're making major progress in handling this thing. He goes, yeah, but I'm just so depressed. I said, are you depressed or are you a little bit down? When I ask that question, what does it do? It interrupts his what? Also makes him begin to doubt what he just said a little bit. And by asking the question, you know what he said? He said, I guess I'm actually a little bit down. And as he does that, you can watch his whole body change. I said, yeah, a little bit down. Have you ever been a little bit down before? He said, yeah. I said, have you turned around? He said, yeah. And then I explained to him. I said, if you keep talking about how you're depressed, you are. Talk about being a little bit down. And pretty soon you can graduate that to feeling somewhat resourceful. Don't say you're depressed. I said, just do me a favor. The next 10 days, don't use the word depression to describe your state. Ever again for the next 10 days. You can always go back. And all I did was a little bit down. You know what happened? He called me about the fourth day. He said, you know what? I feel so good. I said, no, you're supposed to be a little down. He said, no, but once you're a little down, it's really easy to get to feeling good. I said, depressed, though, that's too deep. That's way down there. So your assignment is very simple. Your number one assignment is a lifelong assignment. Your lifelong assignment is this. Watch your TV, transformational vocabulary. Watch your TV. As you're hearing people talk, including yourself especially, and you give things labels, this is what this means. Remember, whatever you say it means, that's true. So as soon as you hear yourself saying, I'm devastated, I'm depressed, I'm angry, I'm frustrated, you might ask yourself the question, am I really frustrated or am I about to learn something? Am I about to have a breakthrough? Am I frustrated or am I curious? See, that's what you see me do with people all the time. They'll tell me something, if you watch me do this in the training, and they'll say, this is what I'm feeling. I say, is it that or is it this? And what I'm doing is interrupting patterning and adding a resource just by asking that question. In that moment, watch the word you put on things. Well, are you sold on the power of transformational vocabulary? I tell you what, it's changed my life, and I hope you'll use it. So step one again is make a lifelong commitment to watch your TV, to notice the labels you're putting on things, to catch yourself along the way. When you start saying, this is really worrying me, stop yourself and say, worry's too strong a word. What I really mean is I'm a little bit concerned. Can you give me some more feedback? So pay attention. Become someone who monitors their language and make sure your language isn't exaggerating the intensity of emotion. See if you can lower the negative intensity and increase the positive. If somebody says to you, how's it going? You go, okay. You might want to say splendid, spectacular, outrageous, awesome, fun. Better than you could possibly imagine. Here's the second assignment. I want you to sit down right away. And if you're in your car, pull over and have some fun. Write down right away three words that you use on an ongoing basis that intensify your negative feelings or emotions. Maybe use words like, I'm angry, I'm outraged, I'm frustrated, I'm depressed. And if you do those, what I want you to do right now is to come up with alternative words that will lower the intensity of those negative emotions. Maybe instead of depressed, like we talked to you on the tape, maybe you're just a little down. Maybe instead of being frustrated, you're fascinated. As you write down these alternatives then, step three, make a commitment. Pull somebody aside and explain to them what you want to do for the next 10 days and develop a 10-day word diet. But what you're doing is really selecting carefully and consciously the words and the labels you attach to your experience. And you let people know, hey, if I start saying I'm depressed, turn to me and say, are you depressed or are you a little bit down? That'll give you the choice to make the change rather than somebody just irritating you like we talked about here. The fourth step, write down three words you use to describe your experience. Like when somebody says, how's it going? That are somewhat positive. And come up with three alternative words that will amplify the positive feelings, that'll intensify them. So again, instead of being things are all right, talk about how things are incredible, they're outrageous, they're fun. And then again, step five, commit to some friends and say, boy, you asked me how things are going, I wanna say I'm passionate, not I'm okay. By making these commitments and doing this for a 10-day period of time, you'll get addicted. You'll start feeling the difference in your body where you have a lot less pain and a lot more pleasure. And you deserve to have both of those. Enjoy using this technology over the next month and for the rest of your life. Also, I hope this month you'll take full advantage of the other two parts of Power Talk. Number one, make sure you read the book summary on the power of nice. Listen, Ronald Shapiro is world-renowned for his sports negotiations, and what's phenomenal about this book is it's not about how do you outwit the other side. He doesn't believe negotiations is a war. It's not a manipulation. It's not a science. It's the commerce of information, and we're all negotiators. Listen, if you got kids, I know you know what negotiation is. It's time to go to bed, and then the negotiation begins. If you're going to buy a car, if you're going to be in business, it's really about how to meet each other's needs in the shortest period of time by knowing the most about the situation. So take advantage of it. And I'm sure you're going to really enjoy our interview this month with Captain Gerald Coffey. Jerry's become a great friend of mine over the last couple of years. He spent 7 years in Wallu Prison as a POW in North Vietnam.
his experience of going through unbelievable tragedy, physical challenges, mental and emotional challenges, and how he overcame that provides a message that I think every one of us needs to hear. And while you may not agree 100% with his views, let's say, on the war, it's pretty hard to disagree with the power that every one of us have inside of ourselves if we'll utilize what he shares. So I know you'll enjoy it. So turn immediately to Meet Jerry Coffey. And until I get a chance to visit with you again next month, live with passion.